Now, I know that you're not supposed to begin a sermon with an apology, but that's what I'm going to do. I am sorry that I have chosen such cutesy titles for my sermons these past few weeks. I mean, really, last week, a stinking prayer. And today, a drinking prayer? It's too cute. I'm sorry. And yet that's what this is. Apology. Actually, when you think about it, apology is very much a part of worship. We don't call it that necessarily, but I mean, how does worship usually begin? It starts out with hallel. It starts out with praise and very quickly moves into what? Confession. Which is pretty much an act of placing God in the center of the picture and taking us out of the center of it all. Or to put it in different terms, it's getting ourselves off of that throne and putting God there. Or, to use an appropriate image for today, getting off the dang donkey and allowing Jesus to ride in there. Confession. Confession is actually a good thing. Because it reminds us that everything doesn't depend upon us. The world doesn't rest upon our shoulders. Thank God. That is good news. Blessed is the one who comes in the name of the Lord. Of course, you know that word apology has a couple different meanings. Apology actually, logi is just simply word in Greek. Apology can be sort of a confession, but it also, in faith terms, is profession. The great defenders of the faith were often called apologists. Not that they were out there apologizing for Jesus. Oh, we're sorry what he did. You know, backpedaling a little bit and just being all embarrassed about this thing called faith. But professing faith. Apology is actually a good thing. Now, we have this drinking prayer. Again, forgive me for that title. Of Jesus, which points out to us that even Jesus was tempted. As we read this in the back of our heads, we should be doing some backpedaling and remembering an earlier chapter in the story. The place after, the time after Jesus was himself baptized, and that baptism being sort of a commissioning to his ministry. And he was sent not into a garden, but into a dry and desolate place, a wilderness. 40 days, 40 nights, no eating, no drinking. And he was visited by the tempter. Do you remember that? Matthew's version, it comes right before, in the chapter right before the Sermon on the Mount. Interesting place to put it. If you recall from that event, the tempter came, and let me just refresh your memory. First of all, speaking to his hunger. If you're the Son of God, command these stones to become loaves of bread. And he answered, what? One does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. So I imagine he was quite hungry and probably thought of that. And the devil took him to the holy city and placed him on the pinnacle of the temple, saying to him, "If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, He will command His angels concerning you, and on their hands they will bear you up so that you will not dash your foot against a stone." Now, picture this scene, if you will, and imagine what that sight would have meant when viewed from below. Up there, Jesus, to be tossed down and saved by angels, God's army. What would have been your response to that? Well, maybe back in those days, that was a sign that God is on the move and God's armies are about ready to recapture the Holy Land. It would have been in the eyes of many, and you got to understand the mindset that is not so much a part of our way of viewing things anymore. But this would have been, how would our Muslim friends have called this? This would have been a call to jihad. Okay? Are you getting it? Here's the king at the top, being tempted with power. This is God power. And Jesus responded to the tempter. Again, it is written, "Do not put the Lord your God to the test." And again, the Lord took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor. And he said to them, "All these I will give you if you fall down and worship me." And Jesus said, "Away with you, Satan. For it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve him only." And then there's this verse. Then the devil left him, and suddenly angels came and waited on him. And other versions of the, whether it's Luke or Mark or John, says the devil left to return at another time. Here we see in the Garden of Gethsemane, some years later, Jesus praying. What is in the back of his head as he is pondering the cup that he is thinking about drinking? What is the cup? And what is he seeking to avoid? Is this a scaredy cat Jesus who is afraid of being hurt? Or is this a Jesus who is once again being tempted with something that is contrary to the will of God as he understands it? Good question. We have Jesus struggling with it. Not once, not twice, but three times. Till finally, through prayer, he has come to the point of being able to say, and not just the words, but mean, "Thy will be done." Now, if you have any doubt as to what the temptation was, all you have to, in Matthew's gospel, do is just to turn a few verses later, because you remember what happened after he finished his prayer. And he said to his disciples, "Get up, my betrayer is at hand," and indeed that was true. Let's just read a little bit further. Judas arrived with a large crowd, with clubs and swords. chief priests and elders. And Jesus is betrayed with a kiss. And suddenly, one of those who with Jesus put his hand on his sword, do you remember this? Drew it and struck the slave of the high priest, cutting off his ear. Then Jesus said to him, this is verse 52, "Put your sword back into its place, for all who take the sword will perish by the sword." And hear this. "Do you not think that I cannot appeal to my Father, and he will at once send me more than 12 legion of angels?" There is the temptation to bring the kingdom of God in by force. 12 legion of angels. Caesar's soldiers could not have withstood such an onslaught. Holy war. But how then, Jesus went on to say, would the scriptures be fulfilled, which say it must happen this way? Happen this way. Through his drinking prayer, and this is not drinking to avoid, but drinking to take on the will of God, Jesus sets his face to the day ahead. And you know the story. It is central to our faith. How he was then arrested, beaten, tried, not in one court, but in three. And in a long, convoluted way, he was brought to the cross, where he drank from the cup of our salvation. Something we will celebrate. We will remember. We will proclaim. We will profess our apologia, our word, come Thursday. Of course, that's not the end of the story, is it? You know the end of the story. But we got to pause it right there for the purposes of this day. Easter's coming. Easter's coming. Easter's coming.